This is Power Hour. A production of IrishSportsDaily.com. Your number one source for year-round Fighting Irish recruiting news and more. Visit IrishSportsDaily.com now to sign up for a premium subscription. And now, the host of Power Hour, Mike Frank.
Folks, welcome once again, everybody, to Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. I'm your host, Mike Frank. We've got a great show lined up for today. Lots going on with Notre Dame football right now. We've got Irish Invasion coming up this weekend, so we're going to talk to Matt Freeman a little bit about that. He'll be out there covering it along with Jamie and I, of course, and we'll have a lot of good, exciting stuff happening from Invasion. Also, transfer news, I guess. There's the, we'll talk about that. We're going to get Jamie Uyama to talk about, some of the recent news we've heard as far as that goes. And then we're going to get Bob Kamel on and talk to him as well about some things. And so looking forward to that. Before we get going, want to say, first of all, thanks to everyone who has donated to us for the podcast. If you want to donate, if you enjoy the show and you like Bob Kamel and you like a lot of the stuff we're doing with the show, we have an opportunity for you to support what we're doing. It helps us pay Bob Kamel and keep him on the show, which is very important. I'm really excited to have him on, especially this season. I think it's going to be real fun to have him on this season as well. The way to donate is if you go to patreon.com, which is patreon.com, patreon.com/IrishSportsDaily. You can donate there. Also, if you have any questions, you can go to the front page of Irish Sports Daily. We'll have the Power Hour story published there, and there'll be a direct link. You can actually go to the Patreon page. We have a $1 donation or a $2 donation per month. The $2 donation per month will get you an extra 15 minutes where you can ask questions of Bob Kamel and I, and we just kind of upload that for the Patreon $2 members. We've got, I think, 6 or 7 questions today that Bob and I will tackle after Power Hour that'll just be uploaded for those $2 donators. Once again, it's $2 per month. And essentially, that's what, 25 cents, 50 cents per show. And that's not even dealing with the recruiting stuff that we'll have as well. So I wanted to mention once again, if you want to go donate, you can find us at patreon.com/IrishSportsDaily. Or you can go to the front page of Irish Sports Daily, find the Power Hour story that's on there that we publish every Monday. And there'll be a link in there explaining what Patreon is, how to get there, what to donate, that kind of stuff. Very simple situation for you to do. Also wanted to mention, if you have any questions about the show that you'd like to ask Jamie or Matt or Christian or I, you can go to The Huddle, which is our free board on IrishSportsDaily.com. You can just go to the front page, click on the message board section, click on the huddle, and you can ask us whatever questions you want. Also, if you have any questions or you want to do some advertising on the podcast, you can email me at MikeFrank18@SBCGlobal.net. MikeFrank18@SBCGlobal.net. Right now, we're going to bring in Matt Freeman. What's up, buddy? How are you, man?
What's up, Mike? How are you?
It's been a while. We haven't had you on in a while. So have you been missing me?
Of course.
Just a little bit?
I'm just jealous of the relationship you and Bob have right now.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. So obviously, this is a pretty exciting, invasion. There's not as much, I guess, big names expected as we've had in the past. Matt, that's just part of 4-8, unfortunately, and I don't think you can really fix that until you win some games. The other thing that Notre Dame has going against them is there's a Rivals camp down in is it Rivals? I think it is Rivals, right?
Yeah, they got a Rivals 5-star challenge down in Indy on Sunday, I believe, so a lot of the top kids in the 2018-2019 class are going to end up going to that. And then there's also a Sound Mind, Sound Body camp in Michigan over the weekend, too. So it's stretching these kids real thin, so they got to make decisions on which camps they want to go to. And unfortunately for Notre Dame, Rivals is going to win out just because they get all the the free stuff and the free
swag
exposure. So
yeah, well, and that's the thing. I mean, you're sitting there, you're taking some chances by having these camps when you schedule them, and you don't know when they're going to schedule the other things. You really don't know that going in. But I think Notre Dame, you know, it's not as big a list as we'd thought, but I think that there's some important people there. So let's is that your text or?
Yeah, I apologize.
Okay. So anyway, it looks like right now there's four of the Notre Dame offers are going to be there. Micah Jones, who I'm excited to see, because last year there was a little disagreement, I guess, amongst ISD. I guess I don't know if we call ourselves experts, but I kind of liked Micah Jones. I thought he had really good hands. I thought he played really well for a young guy. You and Jamie weren't quite as high on him as I was, so I'm excited to see how much he's developed over the year, and that's going to be real interesting to see. Is he faster? Is he bigger? You know, so I'm excited to see that. We've got the Adamanola twins coming in, Jason and Justin. They'll be working out, and of course, Bo Bauer, the linebacker. Those four commits are coming in. I don't know. I've not seen the Adamanola twins at all, so I'm really excited about watching them.
Yeah, I mean, the twins are going to be very impressive, especially Jason. I mean, he could very well end up being the top defensive tackle in the class. So you got to be pretty happy with where Notre Dame is right there. I think Marquise Stepp will be in town too. So that's always a good sign for Notre Dame recruiting when Marquise is back in South Bend. But yeah, I mean, it's not a great list in terms of the commits coming back, but a lot of Notre Dame's commits are out of the region at this point. So I mean, it's not. I'm not worrying about anyone's commitments per se. It's just not an ideal time for those kids to get back on campus and whatnot for the invasion camp.
Okay. Offers. There's some guys who do have offers that are coming in that are important. Tight end Tommy Tremble. Of course, defensive back Shane Simon, one of the top players in the entire country. Love his film. Two Indiana boys, a corner named DJ Johnson from Indianapolis, and another linebacker, Cam McGrone. It's going to be interesting to watch those two players because they're recent offers, and it'll be interesting to watch them. And then, of course, Jacob Lacey, you know, the 2019 defensive tackle, came last year. Very, very impressive player. A lot of people think he could be a guy who, you know, is on the clock for a possible commitment at some time soon. So that'll be interesting to watch him as well.
Yeah, I mean, Lacey very well could be one of those founding pieces to the 2019 class if Notre Dame can get him locked up early. Obviously, he's been to campus multiple times, but he's also been to several other schools like Michigan and Ohio State multiple times as well. But I do think Notre Dame is kind of in the driver's seat at this point. I don't really expect him to make a commitment anytime soon, but I really like where Notre Dame's at with him. And then even last time he was up, up here with Jamon Franklin, the 217 D tackle that is announcing actually on Tuesday. So Notre Dame's in good shot with Franklin, and then hopefully that can help Lacey if Franklin does end up committing to Notre Dame. But I'm pretty excited to see Cam McGrone work out. He's coming off an ACL tear in the fall, but he was out in Oakland for the opening regional, and he looked explosive. I mean, I was not expecting him to look like that on tape, but I mean, he popped out, and it was impressive. Then I actually haven't seen DJ Johnson at all, so I'm kind of curious to see what he kind of brings to the table. And then Shane Simon, I think we all know what he has talent-wise, so I think it's more of him just becoming more familiar around the commits, the players, and the coaches. So it's a pretty big visit for that.
All right, now there's you know, probably another 30, 35 guys coming. Anybody you think out of this group that may get an offer, some guys that you know, are potential offers?
Yeah, there's quite a few. The first one that comes to mind is a 2019 receiver out of Missouri. His name's Kyron Williams. He's got Arkansas, Iowa, Memphis, Nebraska, Northwestern, Wisconsin offers. So he could be one of those names that pops up. And then there's the 2018 cornerback from Brock Wright's high school down in Houston, Eric Hallett. He was up for the spring game. And then he's been talking to Coach Light over the last 4 months, and Light's kind of basically told him, like, if he comes up and he moves around and checks all the boxes, and he's could possibly get an offer after the invasion camp. So he's coming up. And then I guess the last one for me would be the 219 receiver out of Fort Wayne. His name's Craig Young. He's 6'5", 200 pounds, but he ran a 10.63 in the 100 last week. And I was talking to his receiver coach at EWP Sports, they've trained Drew Tranquil, Tyler Eifert, Jalen Smith. I mean, basically anybody who's anybody in Fort Wayne. And they said Craig Young's the best athlete to ever come out of Fort Wayne. And this kid's just finishing up his sophomore year. So that's pretty high praise.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what he looks like going against some of these corners and DBs that will be up here. And I think it'll be a pretty competitive environment, unlike some of the past years. I think a lot of these kids are coming up to show the coaches what they can do. So hopefully that makes the camp portion a little bit better than what we've seen in the past. But like you said, the talent, I think, is definitely a little bit down this year. But there are some intriguing names that could potentially get offers if they put up a good showing.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. There's also some guys, there's a couple 218 O-linemen coming in.
Yep.
You know, that'll be interesting to see whether Notre Dame moves on them. They all have, you know, fairly good offers. You know, so that'll be interesting to see what, you know, whether they show up. There's some 219 quarterbacks coming in, which is important. You know, and it just seems like they're just trying to get, you know, a head start a little bit on 219. There's a number of 219 guys coming in as well that'll be interesting to check out. Anybody out of that kind of group that you think to keep an eye on?
The two offensive linemen from the Midwest, Carlos Vedarello and Nick Mazarazes. Sorry, guys, I don't know how to pronounce your last names. But both of them have very, very high offer lists. They're both around 20 offers right now. They're not the greatest offer list. A lot of them are the low to mid-tier Power 5 schools like Iowa, Oregon State, Minnesota. But obviously, we know Minnesota's on the rise. I mean, those guys are intriguing options because I know Notre Dame is looking to fill out a couple more spots along the offensive line right now. So if they come up and impress here, I think they could be in line for an offer. And then you mentioned the 219 quarterbacks. I talked to Ryan Helinski. He's out of California, the LA area, and he was actually leaving Boston College's campus when he called me. And he had just got the Boston College offer because he was up for camp, and he's flying down to Texas A&M for their camp today or tomorrow. But he could be a name that Notre Dame moves on here in the coming weeks. His older brother is a quarterback at Washington State. So I'm curious to see what he can do because he's starting as a sophomore in one of the toughest leagues in California and did pretty well. So he has two offers from Montana State and San Jose State. I know that's not the sexiest of offers, but for a 219 quarterback, he's a name to watch.
Okay. All right, Matt. Well, we look forward to your coverage coming up here this weekend. Well, obviously, we'll all be out there doing our thing. And so if you're not a member of IrishSportsDaily.com, we'll have a lot of stuff going on, a lot of video interviews, a lot of print interviews as well. Jamie will offer his thoughts on the players there. I'll offer mine as well, kind of give my thoughts about who I liked and that type of thing. So that'll be interesting, and looking forward to it. Thanks for coming on the show again.
Yep, no problem.
Thank you. All right, folks, we're back here with Irish Sports Daily Power Hour, and I've got my other good buddy up there in Canada, my good friend Jamie Uyama, who I get to see this weekend. Jamie, I'm excited to see you again.
Wow, I'm honored.
It's been a while. It's been a while, and I haven't had the opportunity to give you a hard time, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking forward to that part of it, but everything else will be good.
All right. Now, Jamie, there's been a lot of stuff happening, I guess, recently. The Josh Barajas transfer, You know, it's interesting because a lot of people thought this guy was going to be a really good player. You know, when I watched his film, I thought he'd be a really good player. Just didn't seem to materialize. Do you think this is a big loss for Notre Dame? I mean, he's definitely buried on the depth chart, but he was a pretty athletic player. Just for whatever reason, never materialized, just nothing. And literally nothing. I was just, you know, it never seemed like he was ever in the race, ever, you know, in contention, and that was a surprise to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was surprising. I liked his film quite a bit, too, when he was a recruit, and, you know, he was pretty highly touted. He was, you know, he was a four-star kid. I thought he was going to be a pretty good player, but, you know, he came in maybe a little bit overweight when he first came in, and then that second year, I vividly remember in camp him kind of having a really hard time in this one drill where he got beat about four times in a row, and it just I don't know if it was a confidence thing, but it just seemed to like snowball for him and all go downhill. And I really don't think it's a big loss because, you know, I mean, where he was at, and the fact that, you know, guys like Jonathan Jones and Jameer Jones are both above him on the depth chart, or they appeared to be in the spring. And I like what I saw from Jameer, especially this spring, in terms of where they're at. And then, you know, you got David Adams and Drew White coming in, you know, and I'm a big fan of Drew White, and I think he can do big things. And I just think that Josh probably wasn't going to play at Notre Dame and probably was going to be stuck there. You know, and I didn't even mention the guys who were actually starting and stuff too. So I think he was stuck behind there. It's too bad it didn't work out for him. But, I mean, at best, I think he was probably going to be a special teams guy. So now they'll get some other younger guys who get an opportunity there.
Yeah, you know, I think the interesting thing, Jamie, is when you look at it, it's really a positive for Notre Dame. And I'll tell you why. Notre Dame has so many middle linebackers, you know, and that's really where Josh was going to play. He could have possibly played, you know, the buck linebacker, you know, or weak side linebacker, as a lot of people know it. But it seemed like he was more geared towards the Mike backer position. They already have Jonathan Jones there. Jameer Jones has played some there as well. And then, of course, you know, you mentioned David Adams, who's definitely a Mike. Drew White, who probably is a Mike but could play buck. But what it does do is it opens up an opportunity now for them to go after players that they needed at the right positions, which is buck and Rover. And so because you don't have that extra mic, that now opens up a spot. So I really think it's going to be a plus for Notre Dame in the end.
Yeah, definitely. Like I from a recruiting perspective, you know, they're looking at a couple of guys, you know, Cameron McGrone, guy who's going to be in for invasion, who's probably a Rover, maybe could grow into a buck. Jack Lamb, he's a buck. He named Notre Dame in his top five recently. So I think, you know, in terms of where they're at, there was a bit of a logjam there. And if guys are developing past them, you know, that's a good thing for Notre Dame. That means that some guys are, you know, are reaching a certain level. And if other guys are falling behind, it's not a bad thing if they're transferring and looking to go somewhere else.
The other news, which will break a little later today, it's already kind of leaked out as far as a potential transfer, and that's Tristan Hodge is going to leave Notre Dame. Sounds, you know, we can get in. I'm not really going to go into where he's going or why or that type of thing, but how does that impact the roster, I think, is the most important thing. And again, you know, I'm certain that it'll be announced today, so I don't think we're really letting the cat out of the bag, and I think some other people have already kind of said he's the guy who's going to be leaving. That's kind of a blow, you know, because they don't really have a second center right now, and if something were to happen to Sam Mustipher, that's a bad situation. Parker Boudreau is a guy that can play the position, but he's, you know, struggled medically since he's been here. You know, there's been some issues, I guess, you know, when he first got here, and so he's not quite ready at this point, and that really kind of puts a damper on Notre Dame. I think that they're okay, you know, if they can get by this year and Sam stays healthy, but it could be a real problem moving forward if he doesn't, and somebody's going to have to probably in the fall, somebody's going to have to start taking snaps in case Parker Boudreau is not ready to roll.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is a bit concerning, even if to say that over the next 2 years, if Hodge wasn't to start, you know, because Mustafa still has 2 years left, you know, there has to be someone there. If something happens to Mustafa, they're going to be in big trouble. And, you know, we really don't know much about Boudreaux yet in terms of how he's been at Notre Dame. And, you know, because you mentioned about the medical, but also he just started playing center this spring. And because he was the third guy, he wasn't getting a ton of reps. So we haven't really seen him go against kind of the better players in practice yet. So, I mean, the jury's kind of still out on kind of where his development is and where he's at. And I think they're definitely going to have to look to move someone there. You know, whether it's a freshman coming in, you know, I know Robert Hainsey, that was one of the things where, you know, he played tackle in the spring and actually looked really good, but they might have to look at, moving him inside. There was talk about him playing guard, you know, some people project him to center at the next level. So they might need to take a look at him there to see if he can maybe fill in. You know, Hunter Bivin, he's played a little bit of center earlier in his career, like didn't play it, but was practicing there. So, you know, fifth year guy, kind of, you know, utility man on the line, they might need to take a look at him there. And, you know, you much rather have a fifth year guy than a freshman come in. So, yeah, he's probably a guy that they want to take some snaps this summer.
How does this impact recruiting now? Because this is, you know, Jimmy, this is something that they were struggling with anyway. You know, they've said that, well, I shouldn't say they've said, but we've heard that they'd really like to take four guys. Right now they have two in fold. They're hoping to get another in Petit Ferrer when it's all said and done. But right now, or Ferrer, but right now it's kind of tough to say how it's all going to unfold.
Yeah, I think they have to take at least four guys now. I mean, it would be a big disappointment if they didn't. And I think if you go back to that class that Hodge was in, where they only took three and they took one was Ruland, and he's kind of like stuck in, you know, behind the depth chart right now. You know, he's probably like a number two guard at best. And, you know, Hodge is gone, and Tillery was the other guy in that class, and he's playing defensive line. So really they only got one lineman from that class. So, and all it takes is really one class like that, and all of a sudden the numbers get a little bit hairy. So they definitely need to take four. I wouldn't mind if they took five now that this kind of happened. So and they might start looking at some guys that I think that normally, like, you wouldn't more like guard center types. They haven't really specifically targeted those kind of guys. Like, I know the one kid out of Indianapolis. Oh, sorry, the name escapes me right now, but he goes to Cathedral, same school as Marquis Stepp, but he was a guy who's going to be a center at the next level, and he ended up going to Michigan. He's committed to Michigan, but I don't know if they're going to try to maybe jump in that race there or going to look at some other guys there, but they're going to have to definitely kind of expand the board to look at some guys who could possibly kick into center at the next level.
All right, Jamie, thanks for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon after the invasion.
All right. Sounds good, Mike.
You bet. Bye. Okay, folks, we're back here with my good buddy Bob Kamel, who's in studio with us today. I put us out in front here so, you know, we could get out of the sun. And I don't know. You like the new digs here, Bob?
Mike, it's opulent, to say the least. I mean, here we are on at Casa Frank.
Yeah, pretty exciting place, huh?
On Frank Lane.
All right, Bob. Well, you know, I wanted to kind of get your thoughts about a lot of things as well. And I think that the one thing that a lot of people don't know is what it's like to be around Notre Dame during the summer. You know, we don't get a lot of reports. The media aren't anywhere around it. We don't really know anything about it. So I just want to get your thoughts. What's it like to be around Notre Dame during the summer?
Mike, I probably can't come up with a word less than fabulous. It is the atmosphere is unbelievable. There's so much going on campus, visitors and the weather and everything. It's just, it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. Now, with that being said, from a coaching standpoint, that's changed radically. And I mean radically. When we had camps, we basically had one camp. And the players would come in on Sunday afternoon. They'd have registration over at the Joyce Center. After registration, they would go to their meetings with their parents, whatever it was. And by Thursday, we had an awards ceremony, and that was it. We were done.
Yeah.
Usually we got Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off, and then we went into a mode of what we called office duty.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be you have to have two guys at the office, two coaches at the office every day, and you pick the days you wanted by your seniority. And Tom Clements and I would always pick the same 2 days because at lunchtime we'd go and golf.
Yeah.
Golf. I'm sorry I mentioned golf. We had lunchtime. But at the same time, you had to be there. And anything, issues the players may have had, academic, social, whatever it may be, was a time to call recruits and things like that. That's over. I am just in awe of the organizational structure of what goes on now. I think fantasy camp begins today.
Yeah.
We never had a fantasy camp.
Yeah.
And then they get into the Irish invasion. And then there's a one-day camp for this. And there's an offensive line camp. Then it's the 7-on-7. And if you're around here, if you're near here during the 7-on-7 tournament that Notre Dame hosts, go out and look at those fields. It is amazing. There are literally thousands of young men and their families that converge on campus for all these events. And, you know, and then one of the things I have to say is the recruiting office, when I was the recruiting coordinator and also the tight end coach, was myself and probably the greatest recruiting secretary ever, Kay Harity. There were just the two of us. But at that time, basically, we could handle things, and we didn't have administrative assistants. I was the administrative assistant. And that's the way our summer progressed until actually we started meetings before the players come in. You can't do that anymore. That's why the staffs are so – they're huge. And how this happens is because of keeping up with other programs.
Sure.
And right now, I don't think there's any question, Alabama is the gold standard for everything that's going on right now and how everything's handled. When you walk in the recruiting office at Notre Dame now, and you know, Dave Poloquin, obviously, I have an unbelievable amount of respect for him and his organizational skills as the recruiting coordinator. Dave, what's in this office here? Oh, these are the recruiting assistants. And there's 7, 8, 9 people sitting there tweeting and texting and doing these things. Well, tweeting and texting. Imagine Coach Holtz tweeting.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, or texting. But it's the nature of what goes on. Then Chad Klunder, who's the associate athletic director for football operations, and basically Mr. Swarbrick's right-hand man when it comes to football, his organizational skills and the things he does would say the fantasy camp now, and then all the camps, he's involved in that. You need big, big staffs and great organization. So from that standpoint, from where I was here, it's amazing to me. And I'll go take a ride over there every now and then, and I'm just in awe of what's going on. And I think they do a great job with it.
Yeah, it is amazing compared to when you were there. Oh. You mentioned just camps alone. I mean, you like you said, you had the camp that would start on Sunday and end on Thursday, and then that was it. Well, I mean, they got numerous one-day camps. They, you know, because they have the older kids, plus they have the younger kids. You know, the younger kids still camp as well. And then, of course, the lineman challenge they have, the 7-on-7. And so, really, what was a whole week of vacation is no longer a week of vacation for you guys or for the coaches. And so,
I don't know, Mike, when they have downtime.
Well,
I really
that's
don't.
It.
I know they're going to have some time. There'll be a little bit of lag time between when all the camps are over,
sure,
and when they reconvene for meetings.
Yeah.
Quick camp story, okay?
All right.
Involves Coach Holtz. We had a number of high school coaches and some college coaches would come and work our camps. So they would always be asking me, could we get an autograph with Coach Holtz? Can we get an autograph with Coach Holtz? So I saw Coach and I said, Coach, these guys have worked hard all week. Would you sign for some of them? And he said, okay, I'll be in my office from 11 to 11:30. If they come with what they want, sign one item,
yeah,
they can come in and I'll sign. So I told these guys, if you want to get something signed by Coach Holtz, come to the football office from 11 to 11:30. Well, lo and behold, at 11 o'clock, the line extended basically all the way to the basketball. I mean, everybody that was there wanted to get something. So at 11:30, I could tell he was looking up and looking at me, and I said, Coach, there's 8 more guys. There are 8 more guys. Would you sign for these 8? He said, okay, only these 8 guys. Well, it became 8 and then 9 and then 10. And he called me in and he said, That's it. You told me 8. I just counted 11. Get them out of here. Well, here's all these adult men that are high school coaches and that. They're in his office and he jumps up and starts screaming. They are headed for the door. It was like the principal came in, and they got caught doing something wrong. And here I'm running like heck. He's running behind me. And the guy in front of me was like about 6'5", 300 pounds. I couldn't get him out the door fast enough. And it was chaos. And then finally, later on, I said to him, I said, you know, if we could do those last eight, make sure it's just eight, Bob. Yeah. I counted 11. So he started, he counted. I told him eight, and he was counting for eight. It was quite an experience. We all ran out in fear. I can still remember that big guy getting stuck in the door. I'm like, come on, keep moving. You're going to go home in a day. I got to be back here.
No doubt. Well, that must have been fun to work around him, no question.
But, Mike, they have to do what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to do what they're doing to keep up.
Yeah, and it's true. I mean, I have a question here towards the end. I'm going to ask you about that. Now, the one thing I wanted to ask, you know, now the coaches have the opportunity to kind of work and train with the kids. You guys didn't have a chance to do that. But did you guys have, like, a lot of individual meetings? You know, did Dan and Leon come in and talk to you at all? Or were they just basically off doing their own thing and you really didn't have much connection with them?
Well, one of the things you have to understand, Mike, regardless of the time of the year, those guys at your position are your ultimate responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Before you move forward to any type of scheme or some duty you may have from special teams. So I would call those guys every couple of days, and they knew how to get a hold of me. They had my cell number. Guys would come in. They had to come in on a voluntary basis. If you could not tell them at that time to call them, and I need to see you.
Yeah.
If it was about an academic issue, yeah. If it was maybe something social or something with their family, yes. But it could have nothing to do with football unless they initiated the contact. So they were pretty much on their own. And that's why the leadership among the athletes themselves was even more important than it was now. Guys had to assume roles, the older guys, as basically coaches. We were really blessed. Guys like Mike Rosenthal and Wisney, they would embrace the young guys, and they would have offensive line meetings of their own. And they would have offensive line night out. Whatever that was, I didn't want to know.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's where you really lean on the older guys. But now you could actually call guys in and meet with them. I love the opportunity in the summer from the time we had to maybe walk over to La Fortune and, you know, grab a hamburger or whatever and sit and talk with one of your guys just about his life and what things were going on. When you had office duty, it gave you a solid 8 hours to prepare for anything you needed to prepare for. And I really enjoyed it because there really were no other obligations, so to speak, and that's where, you know, Tom and I would get together and, you know, maybe take a walk, whatever, just be on campus and, you know, and maybe write some recruiting notes, stuff like that. It was a marvelous atmosphere. I mean, it's great to be on a Notre Dame campus at any time, let alone when it's just a little bit of less pressure. And, you know, just go enjoy the campus, enjoy the people that were there.
You mentioned leadership, and I think, you know, I think the summer is really about when your leadership really needs to step forward and take control of the football team, because the coaches can't have that kind of reach. They can't have their hands on them as much as they normally would. And I was wondering, you know, at that time you guys didn't have the Goog. You didn't have, you know, the players' lounge. You didn't have training table. You didn't have all those things that kind of gather people together. And to me, I think that that's a good thing now that they have that, because now these guys can get together. But my question is, could you tell maybe whether there was going to be a good season or not just based off of how many guys kept showing up to the office and just kind of hanging around and being involved and just, you know, wanting to be a part of the thing?
Absolutely, Mike. Mm-hmm. That's a great, great question. You really could get when it's voluntary. And you got a bunch of guys coming around, a bunch of guys asking you for tapes, or in our days, tapes, now DVDs. Can I look at the Temple from last year? Can I look at USC from last year? Things like that. You could really gauge the anticipation of ultimately what would happen from the first day that you started practices. Now, we didn't have the Goog. We didn't have training table. We didn't know any better, though. Because a lot of other people didn't have it. When we were there, though, when I was there, we were really behind in the arms race, so to speak, when it comes to facilities.
Oh, yeah.
Now, understand, my first day at Notre Dame, I went into the players' locker room. You remember the lockers you had in high school, those metal ones?
Oh, yeah.
With that little thing you push up and down?
Yeah.
And that's how you open it? That's what it was, and I was like, whoa. And then I remember in the freshman locker room, which we had, was the boxing locker room. And there was a set of lockers in there, enough for all the freshmen, and then this giant shower room with no closing. It was just wide open. And you'd walk in there and the steam would be pouring out. And I remember Dan O'Leary came up to me one day. He said, Coach, can I switch my locker? And I said, why? And he said, because some of the water from the shower is coming onto my clothes and my things. So I thought, here we are at Notre Dame. But, you know, we didn't care. You really didn't care. We were at Notre Dame, and that's how we recruited these guys. They never gave a second thought to it. And then all of a sudden, you know, there was the evolution of what was going on at places like Alabama, LSU, some of the Big Ten schools. Michigan had built Schembechler Hall, things like that. And then we were able to, through the good graces of our athletic director at that time, start to build some separate meeting rooms actually in the stadium. But all they did was come in there with 2x4s or wallboard or whatever it was and section off various places. I met with the tight ends after the offensive line meeting. We would separate, and we met in the foyer. I shouldn't say the foyer. You know, when you open the door in the Joy Center,
yeah,
and there's that little spot, and then you have to open the next door? Well, between those doors is where we met.
Yeah.
And again, never thought a thing about it. Now, if you had a young guy come in here and say, look, this is where you're going to meet between these two doorways, while other athletes are walking in to go work out, they say, you know, forget about it.
Oh, yeah.
But it all came down to, for me, being at Notre Dame, recruiting guys that wanted to be at Notre Dame, and just saying, hey, this is Notre Dame, this is it, we'll play through it. But in this day and age, that's not going to fly. That's just not enough.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, what we've seen in the past is it may not have been as big of a deal back then, but it's the increments that it has gone up. You know, so like if you have a player staying in certain dorm and then they go and they visit what Clemson has or what Bama has, the drasticness of that wasn't as big as it is now in certain areas. And so I think Notre Dame has done a good job of addressing a lot of those areas. Actually, one of the questions for our overtime section on Power Hour, you know, for the Patreon customers, kind of asked about that. So we'll talk about that in the final episode of overtime. But to me, I just see this as Notre Dame has addressed a lot of it, still a little bit behind, but I think Notre Dame's always kind of going to be a little bit behind some of the other places. And you know, my thought to you is, should they be? They seem to be so reactionary to things, and they never are forward-thinking. Should they be?
Well, Mike, I think to a point that maybe they're a little bit behind. Things I'd like to see, first of all, we have to be realistic. I mean, totally realistic. You should have a dining room. I don't think there's any question. The Gook should have had a dining room. And somebody said to me, well, we want the football players to eat with the other students at South Dining Hall and North Dining Hall. I understand and I respect that opinion because that was the way it always was. But the way it always was has changed. And you know, when I'm a traditionalist, I remember mentioning one time to someone, and I was talking about the dining room, thought about the dining room. And it was said to me, well, I said, you know, they're sitting and eating with the regular students at large, and maybe they're having a piece of pizza. And I said, that's not good. I mean, you're talking about maybe a guy who's 6'5", 290 pounds. And the response to me was, well, he should have two pieces of pizza.
Yeah.
If the guy sitting next to him is a student at large and he's 5'10", 170 pounds, the response was, well, let him have two pieces of pizza.
Sure.
The fact is, when they go over there, they're going to eat together anyway and sit together. I mean, they'll integrate with the other students. But when you talk about where nutritionists come and nutritionists, have a dining hall for these guys and be realistic about it. They need to have those things. I think one of the things that we've seen in the past year, and I'd like to get your opinion, as the season wears on, at times I look at our team, and our team seems to struggle later in the season, And I think a lot of that has to do with strength, conditioning, and nutrition. I know Brian Kelly's addressing some of these things now, as is Mr. Swarbrick, and I think they're becoming realistic, and you have to be realistic. You know, and I've said this before, and I don't want to offend anybody. I had three daughters who all played college athletics, all right? And I'm totally Title IX. I mean, I'm totally all in for that. But the fact of the matter is, if football doesn't go, we don't have other things for those other things. Take care of the people that pay the bills and be realistic about it.
Yeah, no, I think it's absolutely true. And you mentioned strength and conditioning, and I'm with you 100%. I've been saying that for years. I felt like they struggled. You'd see them lose games in the fourth quarter, which is exactly what happened this last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were lights out the first quarter, absolutely abysmal the fourth quarter. Well, when that happens over and over and over, you have to look at it. And I think that's why we saw the change with Longo being out and them bringing in the new guys. Now, I think that they've addressed a lot of things, and they've done a good job of doing that. There's still some things that they can get to, and we've covered a lot of them. But I thought it was interesting. You mentioned the training table and that type of thing. My flip side was always, well, what about where they live, you know, the places they live, as far as the dorms and stuff like that. And just by listening to your comments, I understand your thoughts on the training table is more about the nutrition part of things versus, you know, separating them. And where I've always said, look, the students, the athletes end up separating from the regular students anyway. They all leave campus. They all go get their own apartments and live with each other anyway. So why do you force them to do that to begin with? But I do see the value of, you know, them being, I guess, you know, added to the student body. You know, they feel more invested in Notre Dame, I think, when they are around the students. You know, even if it's only for that 1 year, they kind of get to know, hey, these guys are good guys. You know, I get to know some dorm mates, they're good guys, and a lot of these guys are going to be cheering for me. I do see a real positive in that. My only thing would be I wish Notre Dame did something about the dorms itself, not just for the players, but for the regular students. It's funny because when I rail on this, a lot of times I'll get parents, and they're like, man, I'm paying $65,000 a year. My kid's living in a cell with no air conditioning. You know, so I get your point about players, but, you know, even my own kid has to suffer through this, and that's wrong. So I don't know, just an observation I've had, and I think Notre Dame should address those things, you know, and not necessarily make it a player's dorm, but just maybe improve the actual dorm experience of living in that.
Yeah, I don't think there'll ever be a player's dorm. And if you recall, in the not too distant past, the NCAA has passed legislation that there cannot be athletic dorms. Well, people are getting around that.
Sure.
They're building apartments, and all of a sudden all the basketball players can go live at this one apartment building. It's a nice deal. I don't think that aspect of Notre Dame is going to change. And to be very honest with you, I think it's part of the Notre Dame experience.
It is.
You know, I have a good friend who was a rector at St. Ed's Hall, and he had about three fans there. I'm not talking about fans as in they like him. I'm talking about fans as in whirling around and
circular fans.
Yeah, the air. So, you know, but the new dorms are all air conditioned. Some of the other ones aren't.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that, to be very honest with you.
Yeah, well, you're old school, man. You'd be able to survive out there, you know.
But, you know, Lee Becton, okay? Yeah. Obviously Lee Becton and I have a little business right now that we can talk about at another time. But experiencing Notre Dame once again with Lee since he's moved back here, a number of his friends were not from the football team. Now, he has a number of his friends, obviously, from the football team.
Sure.
But a number of his friends, Lee and I get around a little bit, were students at large.
Yep.
And I think that's great. I think it's great from the standpoint of networking. Lee found an investor for what he's doing, and he did not come from the football side.
Sure.
So I think those things are really, really important.
I agree.
And I think that makes Notre Dame great.
I think it's a good experience. I really do. And I think it's something that maybe during the time, maybe the players don't value it when they come in, but I think they greatly value it later. And I've had a lot of players tell me that, you know, like, oh man, you know, I still hang out with this guy, you know, that my freshman roommate, I still hang out with him. So I agree with you. I think it is a very good thing.
You know, Mike, getting back to the summer deal with what all that goes on, one of the things is with the accelerated recruiting calendar that we mentioned last time, many of the events that go on right now with these camps and everything, really the people that they're going to recruit or they've offered, they know about already. So the motivation for these camps, with probably the exception of the Irish invasion, are basically to assist young people. And I think the byproduct of that and the collateral added value is exposing young people at large and their families to the Notre Dame experience and coming here to campus.
You mentioned that, and that was another thing I was going to talk to you about. They have so many one-day things, you know, and what Notre Dame has done with Invasion this year is they've tried to make it 2 days. Because you know how it is when you come on a one-day thing, especially if you're trying to work out. You go, you work out, you're tired, you know, you meet the coach, and then you're out the door. Well, you don't get to experience Notre Dame that way. You don't get to walk around the campus and kind of learn about the tradition and go see all the facilities and meet with the academic people and do all those types of things. When you had camps from Sunday to Thursday, you had plenty of time to do all that.
We did it all, too.
Yeah, and when you only have one day, you don't get that opportunity. So I like that Notre Dame's kind of went to trying to make this a two-day event, because I think if you're Ohio State, it's okay if you just bring them in and, hey, it's all about football, because a lot of times they just really don't have a whole lot more to sell other than football. With Notre Dame, you got a lot more to sell, and I think just having that extra time to do that helps. Now,
the one thing you can do, though, Mike, with that is if you have an individual that stands out or an individual that you want to recruit, you know they're coming, you could take that individual and excuse him, so to speak, from whatever he's doing from a physical standpoint. Take that individual on the golf cart and drive them around campus and show them things and take them to meet the head coach, take them to meet the position coach, take them to meet the people in academic support. So you can do that. The one problem with that is if you take someone, the players know, the kids know, as soon as they get back to the dorm, whoa, did you see that Mike Frank guy? You know, Kamel came and picked him up, took him on a golf cart and took him over to see coach so-and-so and that, so they know about it. Now, if you miss someone, which is possible, or if someone emerges that you didn't know about, now you have to play a little bit of catch up.
Yeah,
ball.
Well, and that's an interesting thing. I remember the first invasion, seeing Brian Kelly ride in on the golf cart with two players that were very, very highly recruited. And he sat there on the golf cart. All the players, these two were not working out, right? And all the other guys were working out. And Kelly sat and talked to these two guys for quite a bit. And, it was quite the show. Notre Dame didn't get either of those guys. Neither one of those guys. And the funny thing is, how did that impact what everybody else thought? You know, the players are like, okay, well, these guys are so good that Brian Kelly can sit and talk to them, spend all his time with them, and he's not even going to come focus and talk to me or the players' parents.
This was not done covertly.
No, it was obvious. I think that's good. In that, if you get the guy, hey, if that helps. But I think it can have a negative effect too. And I remember standing there with Sean Mealy, who used to work with us, and talking to him. I'm like, well, I don't know about the optics of this. I don't know how this is going
to
look.
You might want to do that a little more covertly to Coach Kelly. Maybe you need a new golf cart. I don't know.
So it was just an interesting observation, and I think it goes along with what you're saying, that it can backfire on you too if you because you can make some guys feel like, oh, well, this guy's a lot more important than I am, I guess.
You know, one of the things, byproducts of having the football players on campus, you know, I always tell my guys, stop by camp. Mm-hmm. You know, come by, see what you think of these guys. And then from time to time, you could actually have one of, like, if you were had you were the running back coach, and say Lee Becton was on campus or Autry was on campus, you'd have, hey, look, this evening we're going to have, I want to get all the running backs together, Autry or Lee or Jerome, whoever it was at the time, talk about the experience and what was important to them.
Yeah.
And I really think that had a huge, huge impact, because these are the guys that these young guys would see on Saturday.
Yeah. No, and Notre Dame does that and has done that. And so many players' parents and players themselves have told me that is a very good thing, because what Notre Dame does is they take all the coaches out, right, and there's nobody in there but the players and the parents and the kid, and they're like, you can ask me whatever question you want. The coaches are never going to hear about it. You know, I'm just trying to be honest with you about Notre Dame. And a lot of guys say they really, really
appreciate
it.
Who did that first?
Bob Kamel, I don't know.
I did. And when I suggested that we do that on recruiting weekends, one of the coaches said, are you crazy? I said, hey, look, don't worry. It'll be okay. But it was. It was very candid.
Yeah.
And the fact that we walked out and stuff, and we never really prepped guys. I mean, you had to have the right guys.
Sure.
If you had some guy go in there that was about to transfer, that probably wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think it's right. And obviously your starters are going to be the ones who are happy there anyway because they're playing. So, you know, that's a good thing.
Here you talked about leadership, and this is too – this is – where I probably disagree with Coach Kelly. Okay. One, I think you should name, if it's obviously evident, name a starting quarterback right after spring ball. All right. You have two guys that are still vying for the position in the summer. Then you've got two guys that are different leaders. And a number of your players will identify with one of them, and a number of your players will identify with the other one. I want everybody to rally around one person. Second of all, one captain or two captains. Again, I want the team to rally around one individual or two guys that are on the same page rather than a number of guys who – you know, could be here, there, everywhere, and everybody finds a comfort zone with somebody they identify with. And if that individual is not happy, okay, you get all the unhappy guys, that's my captain, and all the happy guys go with that guy who's a happy captain, mm-hmm. so to speak. And now locker room chemistry is
huge.
So, I mean, you talk about one of the things the New England Patriots talk about over and over and over again is about their locker room. It's our locker room. And that locker room has to be a place that is their place and a place where they can communicate, a place where they can air their grievances to the leadership. And you can't have a locker room that's divided. If your locker room has great chemistry and they believe in everything you're doing, you're going to have a successful football team.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I thought that was a very valid point, because I think you're going to have guys that are – I'm in, you know, Malik Zaire's camp. He's my guy.
Right.
I'm in Deshaun Kizer's camp. He's my guy. And I don't think there's any question that Malik Zaire, when he was not named starter, was not a happy guy. He just was not happy.
Nor should he be.
Yeah, and I understand that whole thing. And we went through it. I remember watching the Showtime piece when he got hurt. And I was sitting right next to Angel watching this thing, and I watched Brian Kelly sit there and tell Malik and his parents, well, you know, you're the guy when you come back. This guy's just going to be a placeholder till you get here. And I sat there and I said to my wife, I said, that was the worst thing he could possibly say. Absolutely, because we don't know what's going to happen. You can't say that to a kid and then back away from it, which is essentially what he did. And I think because Kelly knew that was out there and how it would look and the optics, not just the optics to the kid, but the optics to everybody else on the team. Here's your coach saying this. Here's your coach that said it, didn't follow through with it. That whole thing was just a disaster. And I don't blame Brian Kelly for trying to console his kid, but I think if there's one thing that he would have liked to take back, that probably was it. And that probably made a real dent in the program, or at least the team at that time.
You know, the all-access philosophy, so to speak, show, I think it should be all-access with an asterisk.
Yeah.
I'm really serious. I was crushed when they showed the young man in the locker room and they had the camera right on him in the locker room, and he was basically emotionally wrought.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's certain things that are sacred within that locker room, and I think that, you know, maybe that should have been an exception rather than having the camera right on the young man. I was literally crushed, and I think all access just went a little bit too far.
Well, I think so, and I think that they learned a lesson, and I think Florida State did it the very next year, and they had a terrible season too, and I think that was the end of all of that. So you live and learn. I think it's Notre Dame at the time was trying to expand their brand and get, you know, get the idea of the program. And that Showtime piece, I mean, it was fun. I enjoyed it as a fan watching it. I really did, but I think it had some of its negative impacts as well.
Well, I agree with you, Mike, about the brand. I totally do in the All Access. I think it was a great idea.
Yeah.
But I think it went over the line.
Amen.
With the camera just perseverating on one young guy crying his eyes out and wondering what his future would be. That really hurt.
Yeah.
And when you think about that moment and everything a young man has done in his career to reach that moment, and all of a sudden that fast, it's taken away from him.
Yeah.
That was hard.
Another question I wanted to ask you about leadership, and, you know, you've been in coaching for years and years and years, so you've been around it. I'm sure there have been guys, you know, say quarterbacks or leaders who weren't necessarily well-liked by the team, but they produced. They were, you know, guys who absolutely produced, and you couldn't argue with them because they were one of the very best players on the team. And then there are guys that are just real likable guys who also produce. But, I mean, can you be an effective leader if a lot of guys don't really like you, but you actually do the job on the field?
Mike, they don't have to like you. And I know what you know what I'm going to say next, but they have to respect you.
Yeah.
Okay? You cannot hide anything from the players. If you make somebody a captain and the players know probably what the vote was because they talk to each other, and you anoint or appoint a captain, there's going to be resentment. I don't think there's any question. And a captain is a captain 24/7, 365. You can't do things that maybe some of the other guys can get away with. You can't do it because you lose that power of leadership.
It's funny you mentioned that. I wasn't going there with that. But I know, I don't want to say I know, but there's been a lot of speculation, even amongst us media guys, a couple times. And I'm not saying whether it was under Kelly or Weiss or Davey or who, but there's been a couple times where we're like, I'm not sure that guy was actually
voted. You'd like to see those ballots.
Yeah, exactly. But I think you're absolutely right, Bob. Kids know that. They know. I mean, this one guy, and I'm not going to go into names because, you know, that's not fair, but there's one guy that I just know nobody liked. There's just no way nobody voted for this guy, yet he was a captain. And it's just like, how does that happen? And that's a huge error in judgment by a head coach, in my opinion.
Well, what you have to do, Mike, is the head coach sitting at the end of the table. All right, we're going to vote on captains. What do you guys think? Okay, tell me as much as you know, because this guy will probably be a viable candidate. That guy will be a viable candidate. I mean, and now if you decide that you're going to have two captains, three captains, whatever it was, even though, you know, a player may not be that popular, you can kind of take him out of the election, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I think it's critical that after the voting's over, that the staff get together again and say, how do you guys want to handle this?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, if you get around the guys and the players are around the guys, you start to get a feel for probably where the leadership. I always thought it was really exciting, and I'm really serious, to watch the chemistry when the freshmen came in. Now, at one point in time, the NCAA designated 4 days prior to the overall reporting of the team where freshmen could come in. Those 4 days, that was too long. I mean, you're looking for things to do. What's a good movie for them to go see?
Yeah.
I mean, take them fishing. I don't know, whatever it might be. But I thought 2 days was perfect. But to sit back, you could actually see
Who
was going to be a leader.
Yep.
You could really get a feel for that. Who was going to be a leader? That's why when I talk to young guys and I talk to them about the recruiting process, one thing I tell them is when you get there the first day and you're on the field, you be the most fly-around, in-shape guy that anybody can be. Because I will tell you, hands down, after that first day of practice, when you come in and meet as a staff, the first thing coaches are going to talk about is, did you see him? My gosh, he's in great shape. He's all over the place. I mean, or this big-time recruit who's off on the side taking water every 2 minutes, well, he's obviously not going to play this year. Yeah. So that's one of the things that is to have the privilege of watching young guys from all over the country come in those first couple days and see who's going to have a leadership role.
The other thing I told them all,
because I would stay those 2 days with the freshmen. We all had dorm duty, but I always volunteered to be with the freshmen the first couple of days, because you see a lot of things that are going on. You see a lot of interaction. You really start to get the feel about whether we should have recruited this guy or this guy is going to be a stretch. But the one thing I would tell them all, when you put your head on the pillow tonight, everybody else is thinking the same thing. I think maybe I want to go home.
Yeah.
And then when you tell them, look, everybody's thinking that. Don't worry about it. Get through these first couple days. When the older guys come in, they'll embrace you and you'll be on your way, and all of a sudden school's going to start.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that was so true, though. I mean, I've had a lot of guys tell me that, man, those first few, you know, especially when you started getting into two-a-days and you're a complete disaster. And that goes into my next question. One tradition that they removed, and I don't know why they did, and I really wish they would bring back, was the stripe for the freshmen. I love that. Now, I want to get your thoughts on it. And the reason I love that is because I think as a competitor in me, and I'm a pretty competitive person, it would anger me if I didn't have my stripe off. You know, I was one of the last guys doing that.
Mike, perhaps you can explain to our audience exactly what you mean about the stripe.
Well, what it was when the freshmen would report, and this, I believe, started under Lou, they would have a stripe put on their helmet. And basically, that stripe would not be removed until it was voted on, I assume by you coaches, mm-hmm. that this person has displayed the kind of attitude, work ethic, show that he wants to be a part of this team. And I'm sure you can expand more on it. And that was the buzz after every practice, which freshman got his stripe removed. And I just think that's such a motivating thing. It frustrated. And I believe Urban Meyer still does something like that at Ohio State. And I just think that that sets the tone, that sets the attitude, the mentality of what your football team should be. And it lets those freshmen know, look, you know, you're either here and you're in or you're not. And this is going to be a very public thing. And I just loved it. I can't believe they took it away. Your thoughts?
I love it, too. Yeah. I really do. I remember one time at practice, we were practicing, and the freshmen had the stripes on their helmet. And Coach Holtz blew the whistle and brought everybody up and grabbed one of the freshmen in front of the entire team and step up here, young man. He took his stripe and he ripped it off the top of the kid's helmet, and the place erupted. It went, but he actually saw him the way he was practicing and the things he was doing, and he didn't wait. But what a motivational moment. And it wasn't just the freshmen. I mean, everybody was like, wow, look what this guy's done.
Yeah.
And to have, at the end of the day, have that stripe taking off, I don't know if you'd call it a rite of passage, but I think it was a great motivational tool. And obviously, the man was a master of motivation.
No doubt. No question. Last question for the show, and then we'll do the overtime. And again, folks, I wanted to mention, once again, if you get a chance, and you like what Bob brings and you like what we're doing here, go to patreon.com, patreon.com/Irish Sports Daily, and you can donate there. Also, you can go find the show on Irish Sports Daily, and there'll be a link there explaining as well. Go ahead, Bob.
Mike, before we sign off with the regular part of the show, I want to address one thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very important to me. Okay. I know I got a lot of pushback when I said we should always play Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll repeat it again, we should always play Navy, okay? And this is the reason. I did a little research, and I spoke to you about it. I knew a little bit about it, but I researched it, okay? In the early 40s, during the war years, there was many, many, many young men decided to serve our country and became great patriots. Obviously, they did this right after high school. So enrollments at schools went down because so many young men were off into the war effort. When your enrollment is down, your income is down. And because Notre Dame was not a land-grant college but a private institution, and at that time didn't have the funding that it has now, it went into dire straits, Notre Dame itself, not football, financially. Now, they had Great Lakes Naval Station on the far northern suburbs of Chicago, and the Navy was looking for another place to train naval officers. And they came upon Notre Dame and brought that naval officer training to Notre Dame and paid Notre Dame for the use of the Notre Dame facilities, for the use of the dorms, and they actually built dorms there. And Notre Dame actually became financially solvent because of that move by the Navy. Notre Dame has commissioned only second to the United States Naval Academy Navy officers. And that influx of funds kept Notre Dame on its feet. And at that time, there was a promise made that Notre Dame would play Navy every single year in respect to the commitment that Navy made to Notre Dame. I'm all in for that. We weren't around for that. We didn't know about it. But at that time, our country needed these men, and Notre Dame stepped up, and the Navy stepped up with the reciprocity. We should play Navy every year. And if you're worried about the cut block, let me just tell you this, okay? We should not, the Navy's offense should not be on the field. When you line our guys up against some of these guys from Navy that are on the defensive line, we should be, and look, I love the Naval Academy. I'll tell you that point blank. If you haven't been there, you need to go there. It is one of the most beautiful campuses you could ever see. I'm a veteran, and I respect that tradition, and I want to play Navy every year as a matter of respect for what they did for Notre Dame so many years ago.
I agree with you. I think it's the one thing I will say is Notre Dame needs to be strategic in where they place Navy on the schedule. That's got to be very important, and I think they need to let Navy know that. But I agree. I think that they should play Navy. I'm not sure Notre Dame gains anything by it, but I think Navy does, and it's kind of a debt that needs to be repaid. So I don't have a problem with it. I just like strategically where I loved it when they played Navy first game of the year. I thought that was great because you go out there, you get the game over with, you know whether you got any guys hurt, and then you can finish the rest of the season. Plus, it allows you to properly prepare for that offense and not mid-season, and so I love it. I'd like to play Navy first game of the year every year. I think it'd be great.
Well, and again, I don't remember all this talk about the cut block. I don't remember it.
Nobody cared about Navy when we were beating the crap out of it.
Yeah, oh, that's what it was. Now all of a sudden it's like, well, who else? Does everybody that Navy played talk about cut block?
Well, here's the weird thing. Here's the weird thing about it, Bob. Everybody else seems to be able to figure it out. Everybody else can figure out how to beat Navy. Okay, the problem is Notre Dame.
Did you just say just find a way to beat Navy?
Exactly.
No, stop. No, stop, right, Mike. Stop right there. I don't want to hear that.
Oh, man,
no.
I gave you some food for
we don't want to get into that. Just find a way to beat Navy.
Oh, well, and
what a profound statement.
How did I know that would set that off?
But I didn't know you set me up. I mean, it was like I promised myself when I talked about Navy that I wasn't going to mention that, but there you go, Mike.
Well, again, but that's the honest to God truth. It's like, look, Notre Dame, the reason Navy is in this game is because Notre Dame has allowed them in this game. They've given them the confidence that they can beat them. If Notre Dame goes back to just traditionally pounding the crap out of Navy, which they should every year, if Notre Dame gets back to that, nobody will say a word about whether we play Navy or we schedule Navy ever again. It's just the fact that Notre Dame continues to lose to them. It's a bad situation. It looks bad, and that's why a lot of people don't want to play them. So, yeah. All right, folks, that's going to be it. Once again, wanted to mention, if you would, stop by Patreon. It would really help us out. We'd greatly appreciate it. And you can check us out also on the front page of Irish Sports Daily if you need directions on how to do that. That's going to be it for the show. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week on Power Hour.
You've been listening to Power Hour, presented by IrishSportsDaily.com, where you can sign up for a premium subscription. Follow the Fighting Irish throughout the year on Twitter as well at ISD Update. And to listen to archive shows, visit iTunes and search for Notre Dame Power Hour.